You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 JOY 949 or email onair at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Tuesday, the 27th of February. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Dylan Joel. With the news that Sydney's lockout laws will be lapsed on the night of the Mardi Gras parade on Saturday, tonight we sit down with Christine Forster, who petitioned for special circumstances for the laws, and find out if this could be the start of a change to Sydney's night scene. Exploring relationships in our communities outside of the norm, we look at the age gap between men who have sex with men. Does it create a great divide, or does it make things all the more better? And we head to this year's Australian Leatherman competition and speak to this year's competitors as they talk to us about their communities looking past the layers of dead cow to a passionate community that is raring to shine.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 JOY 949, email onair at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
A few weeks ago, the City of Sydney Liberal councillor Christine Forster wrote to the Premier Gladys Berejiklian with a bid to relax Sydney's controversial lockout laws for this year's Mardi Gras Festival. Starting in 2014, the lockout laws were introduced by the government of New South Wales with the objective to reduce alcohol-fuelled violence. The legislation requires 1:30 a.m. lockouts and 3 a.m. last drinks at bars, clubs and pubs in Sydney's CBD entertainment precinct. On Friday, Christine Forster's bid to have lockout laws be relaxed during Mardi Gras parade weekend were approved. From Sydney, Dean Arcuri spoke to Christine Forster, as well as members of the community, about whether the lockout laws helped or hindered the culture and community, and if this could be the start of a change to Sydney's nightlife.
Would it be nice if the lockout laws could be removed on Oxford Street during Mardi Gras?
Yeah. I'll give you a non-swearing answer. Yes, very much so. Because, I don't know, I feel like Oxford Street has died a little bit because of the lockout laws. And then that's led to, you know, people buying some of the clubs and bars up, which sucks. And there's nowhere to go. I mean, even Newtown's pretty bad now. You can't go to Newtown. And that used to be like the second home for gays.
That would be wonderful and would make us feel like we actually lived in an international city.
I think they should definitely be removed.
They should be removed altogether. They are killing Oxford Street. Oxford Street is dead compared to how it was 5 years ago. There's so many clubs closing, so many jobs lost. It's bad for the economy.
I would love for the lockout laws to be removed. I live in Sydney, of course. Yeah, I would love to. The life of Oxford has just absolutely been flat. It's been kicked in the nuts. And I think part of it is the lockout laws. There's no life, there's no energy, and we need that back.
When you sent the letter, did you actually think at Mardi Gras time that would actually be happening?
Well, I was very hopeful because I had already raised it directly with the Premier's office and had been sort of given an indication that it was something that they would be consider, you know, and I'd had a sort of a reaction from them that sounded like a good idea. So the sort of initial response was very positive. I quickly wrote the letter and got it in the post as soon as possible to give them enough time to consider it and get organised, you know, well ahead of Mardi Gras.
And here we are now, Mardi Gras weekend. At least the lockout laws will be lapsed for the night of the parade.
Yeah, that's right. So for the night of the parade, all the venues around Oxford, the Oxford Street precinct and up to basically to Flinders Street and a bit further down into Barlinghurst and sort of up towards the northern end, into the northern end of Crown Street. So that basically the precinct all around Oxford Street will not be subject to the 1:30 a.m. lockout. People will still be able to get into those venues up until closing time at either 3 o'clock or 3:30, depending on whether or not these venues have a 3 o'clock or a 3:30 closing time.
So the lockout laws have been in effect for 4 years now. Do you think they've helped or hindered the culture and atmosphere of Sydney?
Oh, I think they've definitely been a hindrance, to be honest. You know, when these laws were introduced in 2014, there certainly was acknowledgement that there was a circuit breaker needed. I mean, we had had two tragic deaths in King's Cross related to alcohol-fuelled violence as a result of direct result of alcohol-fuelled violence, and that was absolutely tragic. And everybody recognised that that we simply couldn't have another incident like that. Something needed to be done. So there was certainly a circuit breaker needed. You know, the lockout laws have provided that because really, since the lockout laws were introduced, King's Cross in particular has become far less popular as a late night destination. We've gone from having 30 or 40 or even 50,000 young people gathering in King's Cross on a Friday, Saturday night to, you know, numbers that are well down on that. You know, people describe it as a ghost town on Friday and Saturday nights. I mean, it's not quite as bad as that, but there certainly aren't the large crowds of people that used to go there. And so, of course, we've also had a commensurate reduction in alcohol-related assaults and other incidents in that area. So there has been, you know, a big impact from the lockout laws. The problem is in areas like King's Cross and like Oxford Street is that there's been a very severe knock-on effect into the daytime economy as well. I know of a lot of businesses on Oxford Street. One business, for instance, the newsagents next to Stonewall, which was a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week business, had been run there by the same family for three generations, has subsequently closed because the impact that the lockout laws had, not only on their late-night foot traffic, but also the numbers of people visiting the area during the day, basically just made their business no longer viable. So they've closed. And there are lots and lots of other businesses that have had similar impacts and report similar sort of consequences in the daytime economy as well as the nighttime economy. So it has had a severe impact, and that's just going beyond the fact that, you know, people can't enter a premises after 1:30. They have to get in before 1:30 if they want to be there for last orders. So, yeah, it's had a pretty severe impact all round. But, you know, it's been a positive in terms of the numbers of alcohol-related incidents. And I really think that it's brought about a kind of a change of culture and a behavioural shift in the late-night culture in Sydney, which means that probably now we can look at winding them back. Because there has been a change of culture and a change of behaviour. Let's take a look at winding back these lockout laws, see if we can get all venues back to a closing time of 3 a.m., which I think is reasonable, and not impose what I think is now a draconian lockout imposition at 1:30 a.m., which is not late by anyone's standards.
So do you think if we can make the lapse lockout laws for that one night be something successful, we can start to use it as an example to be able to change that?
Absolutely. I mean, that's my intention, and that's what I've said to the Premier, is that this could serve as a very useful trial to show that Sydney has grown up a bit, that Sydney doesn't have the problem with street violence that we were seeing in 2014 and which led to the introduction of these laws. Obviously, Mardi Gras is a huge celebration. It's a big party. There's never, you know, it's very rare that we ever get any incidents around Mardi Gras and, you know, any negative incidents around Mardi Gras. And this year in particular, I think, will be even more celebratory than it normally is, obviously, given that the community is marking 40 years of Mardi Gras since 1978 and of course, the very important passage of same-sex marriage legislation, which will, I think, add an extra dimension of celebration to the parties this year. So if we can so as a community, as a city, that you know, everybody can get along, be inclusive, be respectful, maintain a positive, happy feel in this precinct over the course of Mardi Gras, which is absolutely what I expect, then that would be a really good pointer to the government to say, well, maybe it's time we should look at winding back these laws more broadly.
That was Dean Arcuri speaking to Christine Forster about Sydney's lockout laws. Could a change be on the way? The City of Sydney has put together a nightlife and creative sector panel to address the challenges and opportunities facing Sydney's nighttime economy. How things go on Mardi Gras parade night could see the change of Sydney's nightlife for the better.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
The Australian Leatherman competition was held on the weekend in Sydney, with competitors from all around the nation vying for the national title so they could represent Australia at the International Mr. Leather in Chicago later this year. Dean Arcuri headed to Sydney and spoke to the competitors about what the title meant to them and why they are competing.
My name is Scotty and I'm representing Queensland Leather, currently Mr. Queensland Leather at the moment. So I'm representing the state of Queensland and my family at home, which is the Bootco Group.
I'm James Davidson. I am Mr. Adelaide Leather 2017, representing South Australia.
My name's Jersey and I'm the New South Wales representative for ALM.
My name's Christy McPhisterson and I'm one of the Adelaide contestants. I'm actually Mr. Dorothy's Dungeon 2017, so here I am.
So does that name have anything to do with any fetishes that you're into?
Do I really have to answer that one?
Last year, Australia's International Mr. Leather alumni launched a national Leatherman and Blueback competition that followed the rules and guidelines of the international contest in Chicago to better prepare Australian competitors for the national stage. Open to Leathermen and Bootblacks from every Australian state and territory, we spoke to this year's competitors, who competed as a part of the Australian Leatherman competition on the weekend, part of Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, and found out what this title means to them and why they were competing.
It's important that we are seen as individuals working hard to make the scene grow and be accepted and people feel comfortable becoming part of our community, because, you know what, we all have fetishes. It may not be necessarily leather, like if I talked to you and said, you know, are you into footy shorts or, you know, muscle bears or whatever it is, that's typically a fetish, and it's about expressing yourself and having the ability to feel comfortable in your environment. So the representation is about being there so that people can come up to you and go, I follow you, you give me confidence, or you give me encouragement, and that's why we represent one, and we do what we do.
I'm passionate about what I do, and, you know, one thing I want to use this opportunity to, you know, expand our community and make it more diverse, particularly South Australia, which is a burgeoning fetish scene, and I want to show everyone how awesome that is, and, you know, really, really keep building our community because it's fantastic.
Oh yeah, I want to do a great job. This the panel of judges are distinguished community members, and I'd like to be in their position one day, so I'm looking. I guess I put a bit of pressure on myself because I want to be great. I don't want to let them down.
Now that my interviews are done, I actually feel really good and positive about it. I mean, as always, you're stressing before you go in because you're thinking, oh, shit, what the hell are they going to ask me? And I don't know the answers. And I'm terrible at thinking on my feet. But just go there, be yourself. And that's the best advice I've ever been given because it bloody well works.
Saying to them, I said, it doesn't matter about the sash. It matters what you do in your community. The sash is a fantastic opener for doors and getting our names out there. But, you know, I work hard in my community. So it's not going to take a sash to do that, because I will continue to do what I want to do in my community to make sure that it's as positive as I can be before, you know, find a lucky man who takes me away from it all and takes me overseas and makes me a happy husband. So anyway, that'll happen one day.
Never thought I'd say this, but I'm actually quite excited about standing on stage in front of a room full of people in undies, so.
Our fetish communities around Australia have gotten smaller over the years. There's many reasons for that: divides in our communities, changes in social structures, and venues closing. With competitors from Queensland, New South Wales and South Australia all competing, we asked the guys what their communities were like.
You know what? We have a great community. It's a little bit further away from Sydney and Melbourne, so obviously we don't necessarily have the size that those two cities do, but it's a strong little get-together family, and we all meet at a place called the Sportsman Hotel, which is commonly known to everyone for good or bad reasons, but it's a decent little club, and that's our get-together. And I work there as a barman as well, so I make sure that anyone who turns up makes sure they get a friendly face, a kiss and a cuddle, and they feel as though they can have a familiar friend to talk to when they arrive at the Sporties Hotel. So it's a hard-working community. Yeah, it's had some adversity.
They were very quiet for a long time, but now they're going really well. As Adelaide Leathermen, we diverged into Adelaide Leather and Fetish to become more inclusive and, you know, build up a membership, and, you know, we do events based on, you know, entry-level kink for those who really want to discover, you know, what they're into.
Well, I think the defining feature of New South Wales is that we just don't have a home. We don't have a permanent venue here, and I love the Lead when I'm in Melbourne, and Boot Co. in Brisbane. We need something like that here, so I run an event called The Hide. It's every 6 weeks at the moment. We'll be monthly after Easter, with a view to trying to create a permanent home for us. I miss the Manacle days. People are making their own groups. There's some fantastic stuff happening. And quarters and edges of the community. We're building a little kaleidoscope at the moment.
So, what is it about leather?
Oh, the first is the look. Oh, God, it's got to be the look at the start. I mean, you get a man in full uniform and... shooing!
Freedom. Leather's like an expression of... sexual freedom. I think it's like a metaphor against repression, and to see a leather clad man or woman, there's something self assured about them, and it's sexy. And
what isn't it about leather? Just for me, the way it feels on my skin, it feels like a second skin to me, and it smells amazing, and it makes me feel sexy.
The competition consisted of speeches, a PECs and personalities round, and an interview with the panel, which covered the majority of their points, where they discussed what their fetish and community meant to them.
People like me have got to stand up and put our noses to the grindstone and say, well, you know, I'm stronger than this, and we need to push through this adversity and create a better environment for our community. And we can't just fall off the wayside and say it's too hard or it's the scene. We have to go, you know, if I want to make a change, if I want to make it an improvement, then it's going to take some blood, sweat and tears, literally.
It's been fun. Like, I've got an awesome group of competitors, and, you know, they, you know, we have a bit of fun with it, and you know, we try to make sure we don't take it too seriously. At the end of the day, you've got to enjoy yourself. If you're not, you're not going to enjoy being a title holder, because speaking from experience, if you don't enjoy the competition, you're going to hate your title. Yeah.
The winner of the 2018 Australian Leatherman competition was James Davison from South Australia. He can't wait to get out to as many places around Australia and work with the local fetish groups all over the country. And he's looking forward to competing in the international Mr. Leather competition in Chicago later this year.
And how do you reckon you're going to go tonight?
Well, hopefully I win. But look, regardless of whether I win or not, I'm coming away with an awesome experience. I've had the opportunity to come here and talk about just how awesome South Australia is on the fetish scene at the moment, and, you know, just how much it's building. It's an exciting time for us.
That was Dean Arcuri speaking to this year's ALM winner, James Davidson, runner-up Jersey, and fellow competitors Scott Lovegrove and Fisty McFisterson.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Do things get better with age? When we put out a call asking for people who are part of relationships outside of the norm of our LGBTIQ communities, to no one's surprise, we received a lot of responses from gay men who are in open relationships. And statistically, the reality is, fellas, that you are part of the norm and not the exception to the rule. But it made us realise we need more visibility for other types of relationships in our communities. Tonight, we look at age. Is it a barrier or, like a mature cheese, worth every bite?
I think age is probably more of an issue in the gay community. You know, people sort of put so much emphasis on being young and you know, if you're over 30, it's always been that sort of cliche thing of like, once you hit 30, you're dead in the gay world sort of thing. And then, you know, and I think that, you know, people tend to, in the gay community, assume that sugar daddy thing of, you know, once you're, if you're a successful man in your 40s or 50s, then it's okay, you know, if you're dating younger guys, because, you know, that's part of the gay community. But, you know, if you're just an average guy that happens to be in a relationship with another average guy who's younger than him, that seems to be a little bit less accepted in a way.
Age is just a number, right? And in the men who have sex with men communities, we're used to seeing couples of different ages. So why do we mock them? We spoke to Ash, a 31-year-old man from Canberra, who's always preferred men 20 years older than him, and Brant from Brisbane, who's in a relationship with Mel, who's 30 years older than him, about what it's like navigating the gay world with age differences attached, both in their own relationships and the wider communities.
There's a lot of people still now, not as often, but definitely still now, that think they see that, and they'll think, you know, the generic bad sides to it, you know, the side of either the young person is there for the money or whatever, or the older person is there for the young twink they can show off like a trophy. And there was many, many people thought that at the start, and there was lots of rumours that went around that we dealt with, and that's slowly gone away. But we definitely still hear about it from time to time, though. But yeah, that's probably one of the bigger things about it that we deal with. I guess I try not to be the none of your business kind of type when it's this kind of thing, because you can be the bigger person and say, you know, it's none of your business, but then that doesn't really solve the problem you're trying to fix in this particular case. So we try to just tell them. You're trying to get angry about it. Some people generally just want to know, and some people are just being stupid. And I guess they're the people that you try to just give them a kind of flick if they're talking like that. Well, what kind of friends are they kind of thing? But with people that generally want to know, and they're still friends of mine that make the joke, they know exactly what the relationship is, and we kind of made it quite clear, and I've told them whenever they've needed to know. Yeah, there was friends. Oh, I guess it was mostly the friends of mine that are normal, not normal. They're like older work friends and stuff like that. So they're the straight group of people that learnt about it. Some of them would say that Mel's too old. Some of them would go to the whole sugar daddy thing, and was made very clear to them, and they believe it now that it's not the case at all.
I get a lot of people just assume that I must have a bad relationship with my own father, which is not the case. I get a lot that people assume that I'm a gold digger, which is definitely not the case. I mean, I had a relationship where I was the breadwinner for a good almost 12 months, where I was, you know, earning, I was the only one working, and I was supporting my living partner while he was trying to find work. The other thing, like when people actually do know me, they tend to actually understand that, as cliche as the term is, you know, I'm an old soul, so I've always associated better with older people, and it makes sense that I tend to gravitate towards older guys because I just get along with them. Some assume that it is a sort of a power dominance thing. You know, I'm after someone to dominate me, which, you know, isn't out of the question. I do enjoy that sort of role play as well, but that's not what I'm after. Some guys sort of assume that, you know, if it's, you know, if I'm looking for more than just, you know, a hookup, or if I'm looking for a relationship or something, they don't understand. They think that we're not going to have anything in common a lot of the time. And then, you know, I've also had experiences where guys have just, you know, we've hit it off really well, and they don't even acknowledge the fact that there's an age difference, which, you know, is sort of how I see it most of the time.
It's a shame that many people look at an age difference and automatically assume money's involved. Within our communities, you'd think we'd do a better job of thinking outside the box.
Off the top of my head, it would be the different thought processes of someone of kind of this generation and someone of that generation. While Mel usually thinks like a young person, he's definitely found, and I've definitely found differences in the way we think about things, from solving problems or just doing things in general. I think sometimes there's circumstances that don't even cross my mind, that crosses his mind, and vice versa. The stuff that he's trying to do, if it's a problem he's trying to overcome, sometimes I can get the answer that he can't, and sometimes he can get the answer that I can't.
The first guy I ever was attracted to was one of my teachers when I was about 12 years old, and he would have been in his mid-30s at that stage. And since then, it's always sort of been that sort of 20 to 30-year age difference that I've been attracted to. I often get people who don't, you know, in the gay community who just either mock me for liking older guys or get angry at me that I'm not attracted to them, you know, or, you know, it's because it's like it doesn't seem right that I'm attracted to older guys. But it's, yeah, it's something I guess, you know, I've been dealing with for my whole life, so it doesn't really faze me.
Remember, age is just a number, and being with the person you want to be with is what counts. Sure, there'll be some bumps along the way, but if finding the person you want to be with is the end game, surely it's worth it.
With mum and dad and everything, they already knew that Mel was my boss, but that was all when I started working for him as well. And then eventually he was posting on Facebook with me, tagging me and everything, and people started talking to mum and dad, and they asked, you know, the kind of questions, is he just your boss? And I kind of told them, and it threw him back a little bit. Dad was, you know, I'll put it bluntly, he was quite against it at the start. And then he eventually came around. He kind of said, look, I don't really like it at all, but it's your life, your decision. And he eventually met Mel, and now they get along great, to the point of he converted my dad to a Jack drinker instead of a beer drinker. He used to drink a bit of bourbon. He kind of went off spirits, and it's just been beer for a while. So it's not a huge thing, but it was definitely funny to see. Someone he didn't like at the start is now taken his preferred drink preference.
And thanks to Brandt and Ash for sharing their relationships with us tonight on the show.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
And that's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs from Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy949 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Dylan Joel.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.